Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks have fallen in the darkness. And the Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, all this week, for the most part, we've been dealing with issues concerning the New World Order. Ladies and gentlemen, there is an agenda out there to control the world, whether it's through population control, whether it's financial control, because, you know, for the most part, it comes back to money, because the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. If when you look behind evil, you're going to see the love of money. Yeah, and we got another New World Order group out there called the Bilderbergs. And this group is, like I say, it's one of these New World Order. They try to control the world. They want to control the world for their benefit. It ain't for our benefit. It's for their benefit. And let's see what they up to. And you're going to find out they are making a lot of progress in the digital New World Order. See, they want to, well, let me just let you listen to the tape. I'm getting ahead of myself. Get close to your radio and listen.
And it's become increasingly evident that Bilderberg is not just an important place for global financiers and politicians and those who are in the realm of geopolitical events, but it's also a very important convergence for technology. And that is reflected by its regular attendance from amongst the Silicon Valley elite, who are now heavily represented on Bilderberg's steering committee, and they're there every year. And they're not only covering topics like artificial intelligence and quantum computing, for which they've invited multiple figures from within Google and from other institutions, including MIT, but they're very much focused on the city of the future, the 21st century smart city that they promised everyone.
Yes, we love the opportunities and excitement of the city. But there is another side to this picture. As our
city that is now being implemented, we see several projects in the works amongst the membership of this year's meeting. And one of those projects is represented in a forgettable figure on the list, Maria Ranka, who has not held any high positions at government, but who is the Stockholm, Sweden Chamber of Commerce director. But it turns out, if you look into her, she's working with the Brookings Institute, based in the U.S., on Global Cities Initiative, which is being implemented in Stockholm, as well as in dozens of U.S. cities, and it's being modeled in places across the world.
I would say that the openness to the world is really key to our success. We were the birthplace of the mobile phone and the first 4G network in commercial use. Stockholm is a city that is being coded by computer programmers.
There seems to be two overarching projects here that are represented that really are where everything in the world is headed right now. And one is happening in little tiny Estonia there next to Russia, and the other is happening in Saudi Arabia.
And while Saudi Arabia doesn't have anyone attending the Bilderberg meeting, what they do have is Klaus Kleinfeld, the German-born guy who's also lived in the U.S., who's been on the Bilderberg steering committee for years and years and who attends every year. In the past, he's been known for being the CEO of Alcoa and of Siemens, so very big in industry and commerce and very big in data harvesting and planning for the future. You know, Siemens works with Disney World and all these high-tech places to implement basically feedback data to collect individualized data sets on people as they go through these environments. And in the real world, Klaus Kleinfeld, with his ties and experience in Siemens, is now overseeing the special future city project known as NEOM, N-E-O-M, which is being set up in Saudi Arabia in a wasteland desert that hasn't been used for anything else, but is located in a very strategic place.
NEOM comes from the Latin word for new, neo, and the M stands for the Arabic word future, so it's new future. And it's supposed to be exactly 33 times bigger than New York, because we all know how they like their numerology. But also what they're saying about it is that this is a huge civilizational leap for humanity. It's going to be the next way we're all going to live. Everything is going to be artificial intelligence. There are going to be robots everywhere doing all kinds of things, including caretaking. I mean, if it sounds futuristic, if it sounds like it came out of a Philip K. Dick novel, it's probably going to be in this city.
Yeah, they're trying to integrate all the new technologies, and they claim they're going to be the basis of the most important parts of it. And the bottom line, it's going to be the first free trade zone that crosses international borders in the Middle East. It's a Saudi city-state, but it's going to be a free trade zone, and it branches out between Saudi Arabia, the tip of Egypt, and it kind of extends to Jordan and Israel as well, and they're all going to be partners. And just the Saudi government alone is investing $500 billion for this. They're attracting all kinds of outside capital.
They're saying basically this new zone is going to be a global hub that connects Asia, Europe, and Africa, but it's going to have an autonomous judicial system, its own tax and labor laws. It's going to be able to power itself solely through renewable energy. It is not going to be answerable to the Saudi government or to any government. It's going to be an international free trade zone city. So this is going to be something new.
It's going to be the model city for 21st century smart cities. They're going to have people from around the world live there, shop there, go there for vacation, go to their beach resorts, but also fly through on the hubs and connect to the different major parts of the world that all come together in the Middle East. And so again, it's going to be the premier 21st century smart city. At least that's what they tell us. And they say, quote, "We want the main robot and the first robot in NEOM to be NEOM, robot number one." That's what the Crown Prince said. And he's saying everything will have a link with artificial intelligence and with the Internet of Things. Everything. That's the city. That's the place they're building.
And the strangest thing about this is the politics that you see on the world stage right now do not match when it comes to what's actually going on in this Project NEOM. It's more than just a smart city. It's more than just all the creepy things that go along with living in a smart city in a truly, completely interconnected, no privacy having smart grid. But also behind the scenes of this, everyone's friends, because we're talking about business partnerships now that have nothing to do with politics anymore. And what I mean by that is, back in April, so this past April, Prince Mohammed bin Salman came out and did an interview with The Atlantic, where he not only said that Iran's supreme leader makes Hitler look good, because everyone's, you know, doing that right now because they're trying to heat up this thing with Iran, but he also said that he recognizes the Jewish people have a right to a nation state of their own next to a Palestinian state, which is something that no Arab leader has ever acknowledged publicly. That has never been acknowledged. Behind the scenes, they're saying that because of NEOM, Saudi Arabia might recognize Israel, that this is what's getting ready to happen. Because NEOM isn't just going to geographically connect Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt. It's also right there next to Israel and is going to connect to this new Med-Red railway that's going to run up through Jordan, up through Israel, and up through Tel Aviv. This is all about to be interconnected. So they've actually been in the process of having secret meetings right now, Saudi's crown prince, with Israel in investing, because a lot of Israeli tech companies want to invest in this NEOM thing, and actually Israeli companies have been selling cybersecurity to Saudi Arabia. So behind the scenes, they're really good friends, and if you read these articles, they talk about how the only reason they haven't made this public is because the politics that are going on right now with Palestine and all of that. So they haven't made it public yet. Saudi Arabia has suddenly become very moderate. In fact, ever since the new king has come in, they've allowed women to drive, all kinds of things are starting starting to change over there very rapidly, actually. And strangely, and I've not seen this anywhere else, so I'm not going to report this as if this is just totally going to happen. It's just something that they have on the NEOM website. And look, this is NEOM. They actually have this logo here, which to me, you can clearly see an upside down pentagram in the middle of this. You've got a fingerprint here. You've got plants here. You've got some digital stuff going on here. Interesting logo. But anyways, all of this stuff, by the way, has interesting symbols in them. If you look at their videos, they got all the one eye symbology, all that kind of stuff going on. This article right here is up on NEOM News, the City of the Future, and it says, according to reports, Russia and China are seeking to annex Israel, which has access to the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, thereby transferring exports via a railway network in Israel, that's the one I just told you they're getting ready to build, saving the cost of sailing around Sinai and the cost of the Egyptian Suez Canal. Now, I've not seen anything anywhere else that would suggest that Russia and China are going to annex Israel. I've not seen that reported anywhere, but here it is on the NEOM website. Like, that's just what's going to happen next. Interestingly, though, I will say that not only has Saudi Arabia been meeting with Israel on the NEOM project, but a lot of the other people that are at Bilderberg this year, they've also been meeting. Italian companies are talking about playing a major role in the areas of robotics and information technology. They've been meeting with Saudi Arabia. You have all kinds of executives from American companies, major international companies that are meeting. And Russia is investing billions of dollars in NEOM. Billions. And the Russian foreign minister has been meeting with his Saudi counterpart over the last several years as well. And they're talking about Moscow finally fulfilling its envisioned 21st century geostratic role in Eurasia. So they're linking all these things together. And on top of that, you have MIT's Media Lab being represented at Bilderberg this year. And MIT just signed a partnership with the NEOM project. And that was just announced. Actually, that was just announced a few months ago. In addition to the MIT AI ethics guy that's at Bilderberg this year, you also have this MIT Media Lab, and they're focused on all kinds of stuff, as you can clearly see here. Not just things like personal robots and things like that, but they're also focusing on things like neurobiology, emotive computing, hyper instruments, etc.
I mean, this is one of the places that it's evident that in spite of the rhetoric of all the conflicts between the world and infrastructure to actually integrate and unify the world, everyone is a participant. Money has been invested from across the globe, including the US, including Russia, including China, in a world that needs new trains and new cities and new places to go, new ways to get there, new types of air travel, an infrastructure upgrade to actually integrate the world. It's happening. And if you look behind the scenes just a little bit at the nitty-gritty, it's being put together right now, and the problems surrounding it and the controversies are even being discussed inside the Bilderberg meeting room because it's reflected in some of their attendees, such as the Latvia Railroad person.
So this isn't going to just be your 21st century smart city with all the tracking and tracing and chipping and all of that kind of stuff totally going on built in from the ground up, but this is going to be a global hub that, like I said, they plan it to connect Asia, Europe, and Africa together. But they're even talking about how there's a proposal on the table right now creating a joint infrastructure project that's between Israel, Jordan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia to build an airport there with four terminals that would allow passengers to disembark and travel to any of those four countries from one spot. So Israel and Saudi Arabia, not enemies. They may look like it somehow on the world stage. It may look like it's the Middle Eastern bloc versus Israel, but it's not. It's clearly not, okay? And Israel and Russia have been really good friends in Syria. That's on record behind the scenes too. So it's kind of like this war is superficially going on in Syria and the Middle East destabilization stuff, but really what that is, what you're actually looking at, what it appears to me just from looking at this, is that's the necessary thing they have to do to restructure and reorganize this whole thing the way they want it so they can run this new smart, globally interconnected world they're going to bring about.
It's kind of interesting, actually, because I found out about this project through the Bilderberg list for 2018, which we check every year, and I've looked at the section on the website called Background, where they show you who's on the steering committee, and they have Klaus Kleinfeld right there, again, the guy who used to head Alcoa and Siemens. Look at the past list, he's there. This year, he's listed as the CEO of NEOM. That's on the steering committee. But when you go to the latest meetings, click on 2018, and go to participants, you no longer find Klaus Kleinfeld between Henry Kissinger and Klaus Knott. Even though I printed this list out days ago and I'm looking at the physical copy here, and it's got Klaus Kleinfeld of NEOM on the list. Makes me wonder if something isn't really sensitive about this huge mega project that's going on. Kind of strange.
And we've talked about this with you guys in previous videos we've done on smart cities, such as Magdar and other projects. And the future they're talking about, there will be literally no privacy. You will have a digital footprint follow you everywhere you go. Your digital doppelganger will become a part of you that follows you everywhere. You will have sensors in your trash that basically can tell whether or not you recycled. I mean, these are the kinds of things they're talking about. It's a little mind-blowing once you start looking into it. It's a lot more than just having Alexa units, you know, turn your lights off and on and make sure you're not using too much air conditioning. It's a world where your every step in physical reality will have a digital trace on it.
And on the other side of that is the little country of Estonia, the Baltic country on the far eastern side of Eastern Europe, right on the Russian border, the forgettable little country with 1.3 million people. Well, its Prime Minister Yuri Ratas is in attendance this year at Bilderberg, and it's not just because there are unprecedented NATO exercises taking place on the Russian border, specifically in the Baltic countries of Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia. It's not just because of that or because of the troop surge that is going on there on the 100th year anniversary of their original independence. It's also because Estonia is actually about to become better known as Estonia. It is a live experiment with a small country population in complete participation. An experiment, a live social experiment about how we're going to live next. They are doing it. Your digital life is about to become inseparable from your actual physical life.
It's actually a plastic card, have my unique identification number on it and also chip.
Key to it all, one card. It's a digital ID with encrypted files used together with a PIN code. 94% of Estonians have a digital ID like this one.
They have already tied their mandatory national ID card not only to your personal ID and your national ID number, but to the encryption keys that protect that identity online and to all your transactions and records for banking and healthcare. And it's also going to institute voting through e-voting and all your transactions with the government, and further is allowing for the legal signing of contracts online through this card, and they're even trying to regulate the authentication of online comments using this true identity card.
And so you will have what is called an EID, and they've already rolled this out in several EU states. Belgium's got one, but no one has taken it to the level of Estonia, and you'll see it right there. You'll notice that chip. They're getting all of us used to having this chip right now. They put it in all of everyone's bank cards. They've switched everybody over in North America to the chip system, and that's part of the transition into having this national identity card that's really just going to be your only card for everything. They have linked everything together in one place. They said in Estonia, it takes the average person 3 minutes to do their income taxes because they've already got all of their banking information all linked up with all of their government information, with everything else. Everything is linked in one place. And it is tied to you and all of your interactions with your government and with everything that you do online will all be from this one card. Your medical records, all of it. Prescription, everything. And so I didn't even know that much about, I will be honest, I did not know that much about Estonia until we saw them on the Bilderberg list, because I didn't recognize them as having gone in previous past years. But I had no idea that Estonia is now being considered the Silicon Valley of Europe, period. It's been called the most advanced digital society since they declared that internet access is a human right back in 2000. And the whole place was built up as this centralized data digital smart grid type of society after the fall of the USSR. So you have basically what's called e-residency in Estonia, and you are under e-governance. They have an e-cabinet. I mean, the whole thing, it is all, it's this digital interaction thing that happens. Everything you do online must be authenticated this way. There's no anonymity on the internet in Estonia. There's no privacy or anonymity at all. You have none. You have zero. There won't be any, okay? Because everything that everyone does online is logged and tracked through this card. And I've read a bunch of articles about this, and I've heard a couple of the officials in the Estonian government claim that this card isn't necessary to live in this society, but all of the articles I've read, and even Wikipedia has used the word mandatory several times, that this card is mandatory. In fact, 98% of Estonians have this card, and I'm gonna go ahead and guess the other 2% are probably, what, elderly holdouts and babies? They probably give every baby one. Maybe every single baby that comes out of the womb is signing digital. I don't know. So they were saying at first people in Estonia didn't want this card, and they thought it was a huge waste of public funds, and they were calling them ice scrapers, and they were using them to defrost their windshields when they first came in 2002. But 5 to 6 years later, life in Estonia without the EID identity card, that's what it's called. It's called an EID. Life in Estonia without your e-identity card is unimaginable. You pretty much have to have it. And one of the ways they won over the public with it is because they have so many functionalities. It makes everything so easy and it makes everybody want to have it. But at the same time, they also admit that they changed the entire legislative environment in Estonia around these IDs, and they can do all kinds of things with them that you can't do in other countries. One of the examples they give here is the fact that all of people's health data, because that's all tied in, literally everything, your prescriptions, your entire medical record, it's all tied in, is being used for statistics and research without the patient's explicit consent, because once you have this card, everything on it, that's how it works. This isn't just going to be limited to Estonia. They've already got cards like this in other EU countries. And France has already said they're going to reach the Estonian level of e-governance by 2022. And as you know, France has been having a ridiculous number of terror attacks. And I'm just going to go ahead and assume that those terror attacks are helping them to lay the laws and infrastructure behind bringing this about and putting people onto this system, you know, for their own safety. And so you have everything, all of your data centralized in one place. They have even attempted to make it to where your comments that people in Estonia leave on news outlets will be linked to that card, but people got angry, so I think they had to roll that back a little. But basically, they want to make it so there is no anonymity online whatsoever. And on top of that, they also have something called the Estonian Genome Center, otherwise known as the Estonian Biobank.
So if all that wasn't enough with the ID card, Estonia is also collecting the DNA of its citizens. This is a voluntary program at this stage, but they've got people in their population who are already doing this, and you're signing over the rights and ownership to your DNA sample to the government. And they actually say this in the gene donor consent form. It says, the right of ownership of the tissue sample and the description of the state of health and other personal data and genealogy shall be transferred to the University of Tartu and the Estonian Gene Project. And then they mention ownership again in the agreement and say that the University of Tartu in turn gives ownership to the Republic of Estonia itself through the Human Genes Research Act. So they're literally using their entire population as part of a social engineering experiment.
And they will own your genetic data. They will own those people's genetic data. Whoever signs that thing, they then own it.
And they're talking about how they're going to use it for research inside of Estonia and sell or give it to research centers around the world, but they're going to give something back to this country, which again only has 1.3 million people. They're going to give them data about their genetic profile, and they're going to have information just like from 23andMe and other private companies.
Which they've been really trying to sell to everyone lately. Haven't you seen the ads for that? They're everywhere.
And just like that, they're going to get all their genealogy and the interesting information about their particular DNA and everything. So it's going to be fun and interactive, but they are literally experimenting on their own citizens and collecting this data, and they're going to do a population-wide study. And because so many people in this country are participating, it's going to be a really key data set. All this personal, financial, socioeconomic, and online data merging with healthcare records and your very DNA. They're going to be able to look at that all as one data set for a known population of people.
So it's basically...
All right, we're going to stop the tape right there today, but we'll pick up there tomorrow, right here on Ghostbusters.